An Honest Death, the second draft.
The chirp in my earbud means that Sinclair Volreich has pushed the panic button in his office. I slide my sidearm clear of its shoulder holster and point at the floor in front of me in less than a second. Barry and Muhammad have theirs out and down as well, and the three of us run for the office door. I nod at Barry, who grabs the door handle and pulls the door open, stepping clear as Mo and I sweep straight into the room, in and to the left. My set is clear.
Clear!
Clear!
Barry swings in behind and between us. A third set of eyes on a room that is empty, except for our boss. Mr. Volreich looks pale, like he's seen a ghost, or maybe just jumped back onto the curb after being missed by a bus. Other than that, he looks fine. Middle-aged and a little soft, but dressed to the nines in a suit that costs more than my car.
What is it, sir?
Volreich glances around, still wearing that I dodged a bullet, but maybe there's another one coming look. And then he turns and looks me in the eye. And for only the third time in the 18 months I've worked for him, he lies to me.
It's nothing, Cole. Just a drill.
Yes, sir. Well, let's finish it like it's the real thing, then. Mo, take the corners. Barry, window. I'll check the desk.
Cole, it's okay. I just wanted to see how quickly you guys could get here. I think you took 4 seconds.
Liar. Also, that was 7 seconds at least. I don't know what he's hiding, but my brain is already spinning scenarios. Something scared him. Something he thought we could protect him from. But by the time we arrived, it was gone. Or maybe it had never been here. Maybe Sinclair Volreich hallucinated something frightening, and is now covering up for that hallucination. That makes a lot of sense. He doesn't strike me as the hallucinating type, but he is the head of a pharmaceutical company. So maybe he's on something. Regardless, he pushed the panic button, and that means I don't get to stand down until I'm sure he's safe. He lied to me very uncharacteristically, and that means his safety may be in question, from an unusual angle.
Sorry, sir. You're feigning duress pretty effectively. We have to finish the sweep and put our eyes on everything.
Barry looks at me from behind Volreich, and I nod. Eyes on everything is his cue for some impromptu misdirection. He holsters his weapon, pulls a chair over to the window, and steps onto it as if to check the upper frame. He balances poorly, deliberately poorly, on the chair, and begins to fall.
Watch out!
He corrects and jumps clear of the tipping chair. Volreich turns, and also steps clear. Mo, in the far corner of the room, reaches up and sticks a cam dot on the spot where the molding joins the ceiling, a position where it can see the entire room, while remaining almost invisibly unobtrusive. Volreich's office has no cameras in it, by design. I objected to this on general principle a year and a half ago, but backed down. Now, it does have a camera in it.
First day in the new shoes, Barry?
Actually, it's the fourth day, but I'm trying new inserts today, and I don't think I like them.
Secure the chatter, guys.
Part of the act.
It's okay. It's okay. The way you came through that door, you startled me, even though I knew you were coming. You guys looked like you were straight out of an action movie. One of the good ones, where they get everything right.
I never get everything right, sir, but thank you.
Oh, thank you, Cole. It's apparent that I'm not paying you or your team enough. I think a 15% raise is in order. I'll send word to HR.
That wasn't a lie. That was him committing to the earlier lie with a bribe. Which means, if I'm reading him correctly, that he knows I know he lied, and he wants to talk to me in private about why he really pushed the button. Thank you, sir.
Very generous, sir. Sorry about the chair thing.
I'll make sure Barry spends his bonus on better inserts.
We'll leave you to your business, sir. Out in the anteroom, which does have cameras, I screen Mo as he sits down at the edge of the camera's field of vision and reaches around and under the chair. The receiver he plants against the wall looks exactly like a wall plate. I check my phone's Bluetooth list, and generic headset appears on the list. I select it, punch in my phone number, and it vanishes from the list, just like it's supposed to. I've been in this business a long time. When I started, I was 25, and thought that after a tour of duty with the Marines, facing down the occasional rambunctious citizen would be a piece of cake. I wasn't sure what I wanted out of life, but being shot at less seemed like a good start. 10 years later, I'd figured out that private security guys do tend to get shot at less than combat zone Marines. But they still get shot at, and it's even harder to tell where the shot is going to come from. I still didn't know what I wanted out of life, but I'd saved the lives of a few people who did know. I'm 44 now, and I guess the fact that I'm still doing this means I'm done looking for meaning in my own life, and have settled for protecting the meaning in others. And Valreich is the best man I've ever worked for. That afternoon, Valreich calls me into his office.
Sir?
Take a seat, Cole. You know that wasn't just a drill earlier?
Yes, sir. Something scared you. What was it?
Probably a hallucination. There was somebody in my office. I looked up, sensing movement, I guess, and then hit the panic button when I didn't recognize the intruder. I think he was about to speak, but as soon as I hit the panic button, he vanished.
Vanished how, sir?
Like a screen wipe.
Valreich is describing a PowerPoint transition. I know exactly what that looks like, having been a captive audience for more than a few of them.
Except there was some dissolve to it as well. As if from top to bottom the interloper was evaporating, only faster than that.
He's not lying to me. I'm not sure exactly how I know this, but it's something I've been able to do for my entire adult life. Kind of like how some people always know where there's a speed trap. There are cues out there to be read, but I'm reading them unconsciously. It's not 100% accurate, but once I've spent enough time with somebody, I'm never wrong. I believe you, sir.
You believe it happened, or you believe that I saw what I'm telling you I saw?
I believe your account of the event, sir. You're not making this up. I suspect you're also concerned. Concerned for your own sanity, and for your position here with the company.
There's more to it than that, Cole. I'm concerned that this may be a side effect. How much have you been told about our upcoming product lines?
We're approaching the approval phase of a vaccination against Alzheimer's. We're in late-stage testing on a telomerase regulator that promises to prevent a large percentage of cancers, and we've just gotten approval for an HIV treatment.
Very succinct.
That's a summary of what I've been told, sir. I can tell there's something else going on, and that I'm not supposed to be in on the secret.
Valreich sits back in his chair, steeples his fingers, and purses his lips.
Are you? Have you figured it out?
No, sir. But if you're about to let me in on the secret, please keep in mind that if the information is valuable enough, a competitor may be willing to kill to get it. You're paying me and my team quite well. But if you're sitting on $1 billion worth of information, my threat assessment will change, we'll have to hire more people, and everybody will get paid more.
So be it. Cole, the drug interaction between these three products is going to extend human lifespan by about an order of magnitude.
I think about that for a moment. If this is true...
Sir, are you sure this works?
Quite sure. We've tested it extensively, in secret trials, on in-house volunteers, including me. We were 95% sure before we started those tests 2 years ago.
Sir, I think this secret is worth way more than just $1 billion.
There's more. You know that inbound marketing team we created?
That happened 2 months before I was hired, sir, but yes. You acquired a brain trust and brought all your market research in-house.
They're not doing market research. They're trying to position the company for the long game. We already know what the short-term future looks like. When the news breaks that this three-drug interaction extends the human lifespan, the entire product line will be nationalized by overwhelming popular demand, probably in a special legislative session. But before the United States does that, half a dozen other countries will already have deployed it within their national healthcare systems. We won't own any of it.
I nod. As predictions go, this makes perfect sense. There might be some small variation. The end result is the same.
So the only way for us to make money is for us to be pre-positioned in other fields. That team is preparing us to capitalize on the disruptions introduced by an order of magnitude increase in human longevity.
I get it. We're not going to get rich selling immortality. We're going to get rich helping the human race make the transition to immortality.
How valuable do you think this secret is?
In numbers? I have no idea. But if a competitor got wind of this strategy, no, if anybody got wind of the existence of this strategy, the information in this building, in our cloud, and in our heads would be too valuable to allow to go free.
Those with the most resources to spend on acquiring that information and destroying any competing copies would be forced to spend those resources.
Exactly.
Sir, I should resign. My team is good, but if a sovereign state decides to pull a hostile takeover, the only thing we can do for you is shoot you before they have a chance to begin interrogating. And we'd hesitate.
You can't resign now. You know too much.
Oh, I know that. I'm already contemplating expanded perimeters, plainclothes agents, dead man switch alarms. And of course, I'm even more concerned about why you pushed the panic button.
Yes, about that. The intruder, I never described him to you.
I figured you'd get around to it.
It was Death.
Valrek agrees to an extended physical the next day. I don't know how you go about testing to see if someone is prone to hallucinating or if something's gone wrong with their brain, but Tuesday morning's checkup runs into Wednesday with no breaks. And me or one of my people has had eyes on Valrek or his bedroom door ever since the event Monday morning, and it's proving to be a bit of a strain. It's 6 a.m. on Wednesday. Mo and I are in the lobby having a coffee with two other team members, Philelo and Chase.
How long are we going to keep this up, Cole?
Philelo is a Samoan woman with a wide jawline and crooked nose. Nobody shortens her name to Fail more than once. The extra shifts until HR and I can clear some more team members. Mo sips at his coffee.
What's the holdup?
Well, if the event in Valrek's office was enemy action, probative or otherwise, then we're up against somebody connected and equipped. I've told my team that our boss saw an intruder, all in black, who then vanished. The leading theory is that it was a hologram made with lasers, but none of us have the background to research that. I didn't tell them about immortality drugs or that our boss thinks he saw death. And only Mo and Barry know about the camera we planted.
Oh, I get it. You think we're being played. Somebody's planted their own people amid our candidates. They shoot some lasers through the window to spook us. We beef up, and now they've got peeps on the inside.
That's one scenario. They might also have our hiring pool bugged, tapped, and flagged on their end so they can watch our background check process and find the holes in it. So yes, I'm concerned that somebody pushed our panic button, and now we're reacting instead of acting.
Don't go Princess Bride paranoid, boss. Both cups might be poisoned. And there aren't enough of us for a land war in Asia.
I've always loved that scene. I used to imagine how I would have handled things if I'd been in Vizzini's shoes. And it was fun until I realized that I wouldn't have taken that job in the first place. I'm out of range for the Bluetooth connection to my phone, so that phony wall plate is texting me to let me know the feed is active after hours. The message looks innocent enough. Sup, yo. Go for eats.
Somebody missed breakfast?
Mo knows the codes. Upstairs, now. Mo, you're with me in the service elevator. Philelo, Chase, take a lobby elevator to 31, then take the west stairs to 40. I drop a 10 on our table to take care of the barista, who usually doesn't have to clean up after us. On our way to the service elevator, Mo places a call.
Hey Sal, Muhammad here. Check electrical. Find out if the lights just went on in Volreich's office.
Good thinking. Building security doesn't have cameras in there, but there is a motion detector on his light switch, and our electrical system monitors usage as part of some conservation plan.
Got it. Thanks.
He turns to me as we reach the elevator.
Lights just went on. Lights are still out in the anteroom and the west hallway. Whoever turned on the office lights didn't walk in the usual way. Also, the cameras haven't seen anybody since Valrek went up with Barry to drop stuff in his office at 3 a.m.
I key the elevator for a non-stop ride. The illuminated numbers count up quickly. Mo and I are silent, but we're both listening. At 40, the elevator doors slide open. That motion sets off the detectors, and the hallway lights come up. Mo moves to step out, but I stop him. Somebody got onto this floor and into Valrek's office, and we know nothing about them. They got here first and might be expecting us. Maybe they spoofed the cameras and the motion detectors, but we can't do that. As the hall lights just demonstrated, anywhere we go, the lights will come up, so we can't be stealthy. Then again, whatever spooked Valrek the first time vanished pretty quickly, perhaps because it was afraid of us. If we're slow, we'll miss it. And if it's afraid of us, that might mean we've got it outgunned. Or maybe both cups are poisoned. Ah, Vizzini, how I hate being you. Just once I want to be the guy with the Iocane immunity and the winning plan. We go fast, straight to the office, then standard entry. Mo and I both draw and begin to run. weapons held low in two-handed grips. We run through two hallway intersections without clearing them properly, and each time I worry that I'm being a reckless idiot. But nobody shoots at us, and those intersections light up to the north and south, so nobody else came that way recently. Through the frosted glass, the anteroom is dark. Not full dark, because it's got big west-facing windows, but it's 0615. The lock pad next to the door reads my badge and unlocks things for me. I'm in first, pushing the door open and sweeping with it to the left as the lights come up.
Clear, clear.
Bluetooth connection, with data streaming in. We can look at that later. I key in my code for the door to Valrek's office. I grab the handle and pull the door open for Mo, who goes to the left in the brightly lit office. I go right.
Clear.
And empty. Not that I expected to find anybody here. Not really. Mo steps to the corner of the room where our cam dot should be.
It's still there.
I'm pretty sure there's no point sweeping the rest of the floor. Let's see if the camera saw anything. I pull out my phone, swipe, code, and then a tap on the spy app, whose icon looks like the one for a pizza place. I respond to the zip code prompt with an 11-digit passphrase, and up comes the video file. I push play. The video begins with the room dark, but it's not full dark because of those west-facing windows. Then, a human-sized shadow dissolve wipes into existence in the middle of the room. Backlit by the window, so I can't make out any details the moment it appears, but the lights come up very quickly.
Holy shit.
Hooded and all in black, the stereotypical iconic representation of death, complete with a scythe, stands in the middle of the office and turns to face the camera. We've got my phone configured to cast to the wall screen by the time Mr. Valrek arrives in his office, with Barry on his heels. Valrek is flushed, there are bags under his eyes, and he's angry. Barry is all the expression of a granite bust, which means Valrek has been chewing him out on the way over here.
Cole, how long have you been spying on me?
Since Monday morning, sir. I'm sorry, but it seemed prudent.
Prudent? After the lecture you gave me about the value of secrets? Spying on me is a lot of things, but prudent is not one of them.
With all due respect, sir, you called us in a panic, then lied to us. I made a snap decision in order to ensure that my team and I could keep you safe. I'm standing by it, and I think you should watch this before we continue to discuss the matter.
Fine.
I push play, and death appears on screen.
That's him. Hot damn, Cole, you got him!
I push pause. We did, sir. But he's about to start talking, and he talks fast. You really need to listen to this. Valrek nods, and I push play. Valrek nods, and I push play. Death is facing the camera and begins to speak.
Sinclair Valrek and friends, you must immediately cancel your organization's life extension plans. Otherwise, human beings will lose all access to the Eternal Realms.
Mo and I have already watched the whole thing. Then I had to explain to Mo that yes, the company was going to be extending human life. I watched it a second time while Mo called Barry and told him to get the boss in here. Right now I'm watching Valrek, who is sneering and eye-rolling, giving the screen his this-is-bullshit face.
The human spirit or soul is a turbulent waveform. At death, this turbulence allows the waveform to imprint across the boundary wave, transducing the wave to an eternal state with minimal degradation. As humans grow older, however, the turbulence is reduced. Some very old humans fail to imprint. Their original waveforms cease. In your terms, this means they die forever. Should human lives be extended to more than a century, very few humans will imprint successfully, and eternal life will be denied to your race.
Valrek's this is bullshit phase gives way to deep concern.
You have the ability, Sinclair Valrek, to end this project and save humans eternally. Act swiftly.
Death vanishes. A moment later, Mo and I can be heard entering the anteroom, and then the video shows us bursting through the office door. Mo reaches up to check the camera, and the image freezes because I pushed stop. Valrek is leaning against his desk, arms folded, head down.
Cole, could this have been faked?
Probably. I'm not a video expert. But the second time I watched it, I looked out the window. There's a cloud that remained unchanged between the death part and the part where Mo and I arrived. We could probably match that to other cameras in the building. Valrek straightens up.
Is that the only copy of the video?
There's a copy in the transmitter, too.
And one in the cache on the wall screen. That one's in dynamic allocation, though. Might already be gone.
Bring me the transmitter. And then we're all waiting in here for the experts.
Volreich's office is big, but with nine of us, it's starting to feel crowded. Three members of that special marketing team have arrived, and one of them has video tools on hand. Two senior members of R&D are here as well, and they're both scientist types, complete with the lab coats. Volreich, Moe, Barry, and I are the only ones in suits. We've all watched the video.
This is spaghetti monster stuff.
Kurtzman is one of the lab coat guys.
It's non-falsifiable. We can't test any of what he told us. Sure, it sounds convincing because he used words like waveform and transducing. But there's no science in here for us to help with.
Sure there is.
Michelle is the marketing guy with the black hard case.
I need to see the camera, though.
Mo pulls it down from the corner of the room and passes it to Michelle. It's about the size of a pencil eraser. Michelle turns it over in his hands and squints at it.
Yep, we have science. This camera sees in broad spectrum. The transmitted video is standard HD, but the raw file has some goodies in it.
Michelle takes the transmitter from the table, jacks a cable into it, and bends over his equipment.
This will take a few minutes.
Volreich turns to Kurtzman.
The statements Death made are non-falsifiable, yes. We have no way to prove or disprove any of what we were told. Due diligence suggests that we at least consider the information. And that's why you're here.
Can we not refer to him as Death, please? That costume he was wearing was part of the message. And if we accept it at face value, we're undermining our ability to evaluate any of this. For the record, I think it's a crank, and what we should be doing is grilling the hired guns.
When the boss is in a meeting, I only speak when spoken to. My job is to be invisible. Under the current circumstances, that's not going to work well.
Grill away, Mr. Kurtzman.
Dr. Kurtzman.
My apologies, Doctor. But please, grill us. Ask us anything. From your perspective, my team and I are your prime suspects. From our perspective, we need to get cleared as quickly as possible so that we're free to continue doing our jobs.
I've already got an independent agency running deep checks on you, Cole. Your whole team, in fact. They've been doing it since Monday when I brought you into the fold.
Outstanding, sir. Kurtzman looks stymied.
And, Dr. Kurtzman, I think you're absolutely right. We don't call our intruder Death anymore. He is the intruder.
I'm not quite sure how this video plays into any corporate espionage scenario.
Lee is a stout woman in khakis and a Hawaiian print shirt.
Now, I haven't plugged any of this into our X form, but I shouldn't have to. The payoffs and strategies, the incentive matrix, those don't change. This should align itself with existing player strategies, and it does not.
Dr. Lee is a game theorist. Without the jargon now, Doctor?
The X-Form assumes rational and informed agents in the access tier. An irrational, uninformed agent might adopt the dress-like-death tactic in hopes of a payoff, but...
I said without the jargon.
She means that we're either dealing with an irrational, uninformed person with a stupid agenda, but who has access to our plans, or there are payoffs missing from the Matrix.
There aren't any payoffs missing.
Well, let's come back to that. I have more video for you to watch.
Michelle gestures at the screen.
This is the original image with an overlay of neon green representing UV frequencies all the way to the edge of the camera's range.
On the wall screen, the video begins again, muted. It looks exactly the same as before, except a green shimmer appears in the middle of the room. It brightens and then flashes as the intruder appears. It then fades to a low shimmer again, surrounding his form as he speaks. The flash occurs again when he vanishes.
Michelle, what does that mean?
It means that the intruder's appearance and disappearance were accompanied by UV emissions.
Michelle, those speakers in your office, the ones that build the audible cone out of interference patterns, could somebody make a hologram by doing that with light? Like ultraviolet lasers bouncing off each other just right to make a picture?
The hologram thing. That was Moe's theory.
Maybe. But did you notice how there wasn't any green in the sky outside the window or in the sunrise reflections on the buildings across the street? These windows filter UV. Any laser that tried to beam UV through them would have to cut the glass to do so.
Then how did the UV get into the room?
Obviously, it came with the intruder. But what you really want to see here is the infrared. Watch this. No UV this time. I'm only going to play the infrared channel.
The picture returns, And now it's a monochromatic green. The intruder appears. I've seen infrared video of people before, and most folks have at least seen it simulated in movies. This is not that. The form under the cloak is clearly outlined and asymmetrical. The torso is short and high. The legs are too long and appear to bend the wrong way. If there's a left arm, it's not showing up. The right arm reaches all the way to the floor, then up to head height, where it ends in the scythe blade. But the cloak itself is the freakiest part. Lacy networks of veins are visible throughout it, and they all connect to the torso, the scythe limb, and the legs. It's not clothing. It's a layer of skin, like batwing, wrapped around the intruder and hooding his face. His? I see no male genitalia, and this thing is alien enough that I'm not ready to suggest that means it's female.
Michelle, how hard would it be to fake that?
Well, not very hard. If the whole thing was computer animated and hacked into the camera feed, the infrared and ultraviolet elements would simply be another part of the model. It's the work of a real artist, though.
Oh, okay. Good. I'm going to choose to believe that this was a brilliant computer animation modeled by someone with an outstanding attention to anatomical detail. Because I refuse to believe that an alien teleported into this office.
I tune out a little bit as Valreich's brain trust begins working that angle. Michelle seems to think that it's possible for the camera's tiny transmitter to have been hacked, so that the images arriving at the larger wall transceiver were different than what actually happened in this office. It's interesting, but I'm doing a threat assessment, and it's distracting. I do threat assessments all the time, they're part of my job, but right now I'm assessing the threat to Mo, Barry, and I and our jobs. I know that we didn't fake anything, or take part in any fakery, but I can't expect the scientists and game theorists in here to take our word for that. It's only going to be a few minutes before they determine that a hack on the camera's feed is only likely or manageable if the...
Mr. Cole?
Howard Taylor's Notes on an Honest Death, the Second Draft. Read by Scott Graham.
Outline of what comes next, grilling Mo's team. How was the camera hacked? Get a forensic computing expert in here to look at the file. Account for Mo and Cole's movements during the last 2 weeks. Mo, Barry, and Cole surrender their weapons. How paranoid is paranoid enough? The alien plan. Once personal security is disarmed, the aliens are free to attack, and everybody is in the same room. If security is not disarmed, it's probably because the message is taken seriously. Win. Actually, the most likely scenario is that the message is disregarded. What would the aliens do then? Plan B is harvest humans directly. Boneyard.
Go on.
Well, if it's a side effect, then the company is gambling several $1 billion on a bet that is suddenly a lot less sure. But more importantly, you know that if the technology exists somewhere, anywhere, to allow someone to materialize and dematerialize here in your office, then the information here in your office is exactly where it would be used. But that would only happen if the secret was out, and was far enough out that somebody with very, very advanced technology had gotten wind of it. Valreich's eyes widen as I speak, a mixture of fright and incredulity, like he's been told a very believable ghost story.
Cole, that sounds like science fiction.
You're the one cooking up the immortality drugs, sir.
Now, there's a big difference between identifying a series of exploits in organic chemistry and defying the laws of physics.
I'm not a physicist, sir. Maybe it was a hologram or an induced hallucination. My point stands. If somebody out there can do it, and the existence of this secret is out, your office is where they'd use it.
Well, how do we proceed?
Address the most likely issue first. Get tested. I assume the private meeting with R&D each Tuesday morning is a physical?
It is. What do we do if I'm fine?
If you're fine, then somebody materialized in this room, or created the illusion of materializing. They had unknown means and unknown intent, but we can surmise that they did not want to be discovered by me or my team. I'll need some time to chew on that. Also, my team should introduce an additional external perimeter, and someone should remain with you at all times from here on out. I hope that's okay with you.
Perfectly okay, Cole.
Outstanding. Sir, Did you get a look at the guy?
Vorak locks eyes with me and looks deep. I look back.
Yeah, it was death.